Hey everyone, welcome to the Faith Chapel podcast. We are so glad to have you join us. Faith Chapel exists to help people follow Jesus, be transformed by Jesus, and be on mission with Jesus. No matter where you are on your spiritual journey, you're welcome here. If you have any questions about who we are or what you hear, you can visit faithchapel.cc or email podcast@faithchapel.cc. We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's dive into this week's message. Well, hello, everybody. Good to see you. Everybody online, thanks for joining us. Hey, anybody, if you need a little more space, I literally just walked over, switched microphones from a service we just started today at 10:30 on the north side of the building. And so if that works for you, or if you're like, I know we have people that are sitting out in the atrium, know that that's available, and that went pretty well, and we still have some room in there. So everybody, glad you're here. We're going to hit part number four in our series from the book of 1 Corinthians. It's a book that was written 51 or 52 AD. It's written by a man named Paul, who was formerly known as Saul, who had a radical experience and becomes the predominant church planter in the first century. He travels throughout the Roman world, and when he visits these large major cities, his goal is to start a church. A church is a group of people who are committed to the teachings and following Jesus. And so he's done this throughout the Roman world. One of the places that he stops, and he stays for a year and a half, is Corinth, this ancient city, and then there's a series of letters that are written back and forth, at least four of them. And what we're reading in 1 Corinthians is one of those letters where Paul is writing to a church that he knows and loves, but he's now separated from. He's in another city called Ephesus, and he writes to them, and here's what's happening is they're just trying to figure out. Like, okay, so I'm Greek, I got my own culture, and now I want to be a follower of Jesus, and how Greek can I be? What do I bring in? I've got this whole mindset I was raised with, this whole worldview. How much of that can enter into my new life of being a follower of Jesus? And so that's what we're looking at. This is what this book is all about, how to work out following Jesus. So if you're not yet sure what you believe, this is a great book, because Paul's going to say this is what it means to follow Jesus. If you're a follower of Jesus, it's great because it's going to teach us how to grow. And here's what I love. There's three things that Paul is going to address. Three ancient questions. Three questions that people were asking before the era of Christ, BC. Questions that they were asking in the first century, and questions that we are still asking wherever you live on the planet. We're still asking these three questions today. Here's the questions. This is what Paul's going to address. One, how do I know truth? What is truth? It's a whole study in philosophy. It's called epistemology, the understanding of truth. What is actually true? And I mean, there'd be a million different answers, right? There's my truth. There's situational truth. This is the way I see it. Are there absolute truths? So these are legitimate questions, and they're trying to say, how do we know truth? Here's the second thing they're asking. How do we know God? How do we know God? Like, what do we do? What do we do to achieve God? How do we get to know God better? How do we know what he wants from us? What is he like? How do we know God? And the third thing is, how do I become more spiritual? That's a real question too. If you're here, you have some spiritual hunger, and we're saying, like, how do I actually grow in this? How do I become a more spiritual person? Because there's a thousand philosophies on that. You need to what? You need to dedicate yourself. You need to pray 6 hours a day, all these different things. These are the questions that Paul is going to address. Now, before we begin, there's three things that he's going to radically redefine, okay? Three things that were very important to the people in Corinth he's going to redefine. Here are those three things. Number one. He is going to redefine. It is coming. Boom. Wisdom. Wisdom. So we've talked about this. Their word for wisdom was Sophia. It was ultimate truth. It was enlightenment. And they have a craving in Corinth, part of this Greek culture. I mean, we still read about their people who pursued wisdom. Aristotle, Socrates, Plato, these Greeks who were obsessed with understanding truth. And in the first century, the people in Corinth are still so hungry. What is ultimately true? Paul's going to give it a brand new definition. Mystery, mystery. In the first century, this word mysterion in Greek, there was this idea, this belief that there were obscure obscure, little known truths about God and the way the universe operates. And they were only available to a very select few. In fact, you have what's called the Roman mystery cults, where through a process of meditation, of applying yourself, that you could come to a place of enlightenment. You actually ascended through scales. And there are actually religions on planet Earth that kind of deal with that now. Scientology, some of the Masonic traditions, that there's this process and you go through levels and finally you enter into enlightenment where you understand the mysteries that most people don't. Paul's going to use this exact word and redefine it. And the last thing is spiritual. What does it mean to be spiritual? So part of the Greek culture is this. They divide the world up into two parts. And we actually tend to do this as well. The first part was the physical world. Okay, the physical world is the floor beneath you, the chair you're sitting on, the body, when you look around, that body, that part of a human being you can see, the walls, the ceiling, all of that. They said, part of our world is physical. It is mortal, it's temporary, and it's broken. It's not even that important, okay? Then they had, there's another part of the world, and that's the spiritual world. And this is the part that is immortal, it's eternal, it is really important. And they didn't believe that the two really came together. You could just separate them. So later on in the book, we'll get into their own challenges with human sexuality. It's because they're saying, what does it matter what I do with my body? My body's like, is mortal, it's failed in my spiritual realm. So something like sex isn't spiritual. And Paul's gonna say, oh no, no, no. You can't divide the world up into two. It's all together. God is involved in the spiritual and the material world. So he's gonna give them a new definition. So before we begin, I gotta tell you that this, in my opinion, over the last, 30 years, has been one of the more difficult passages of Paul's for me to understand. Because I mean, he's redefining, it has so much to do with their culture, and I've read it, and I'm like, okay, I think I get a little bit, but I'm gonna give you an illustration. This is like so simple. But I hope this illustration will help us to grasp what Paul's about to do. Okay, this is a maze. It is the most complex maze I could find on the internet. By the way, there is a maze subculture that exists on the internet. I had no idea. Where they design and draw mazes and then like give them to each other, and like somebody tries to solve the maze and then they like celebrate. Like this is the, like it's literally a world out there. So this is how the Greek people in Corinth considered truth. They are on this side. This is me. This is you, okay? Truth, who God is, Sophia, wisdom, all of that is on the other side. This is just the way they naturally thought and the way we typically think. So we enter the maze and we try to get to the other side, right? We try to make right decisions. We try to be earnest. We try to be spiritual. Oh, maybe we need to find the right teachers, the right rabbis or sophists or philosophers, and they've blazed a trail through the maze. And if we can just follow their teachings, they'll help us eventually come to the other side where we understand what is true and who God actually is. So at the base of all this, it's dependent, to find my way through the maze is dependent on who? Me. It's dependent on me. That I either have to find the right teacher, or I have to make all the right choices, or I have to be earnest enough that I actually somehow, some way, get to truth. So for the people in Greece, and I would say the people in North America in the year 2021, it's about my mind. I think I can get there. And Paul's gonna blow this up, and he's gonna say, it's a complete misunderstanding of truth. Okay, let's begin to read the text together. We'll start at verse 6. We're just going to take a little section at a time, make some comments, and I've got three things at the end. We do, however, speak a message of wisdom, Sophia. Here he's going to enter into their world, this thing that they value, among the mature. So there's a whole nother level of what it means to be spiritually mature. But it's not the wisdom of this age. It's not the wisdom of Aristotle and Plato and Socrates and your local sophists. It's not the wisdom that you see at the Areopagus, the intellectual hub of the first century world, or of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. He's saying this. The wisdom of this age, even the best thought out, the most well-intentioned, they're going through the maze and they hit dead ends. It's not that they're not trying. It's not that they're not earnest. But there's just no way through your human intellect to find truth and to find God. No, we declare an entirely different way of understanding the world. God's wisdom, God's Sophia, here it is, a mystery, a mysterion that has been hidden and that God destined for our glory before time began. So he introduces this thought that it is, like, it's hard to understand God and his ways, but God wants to reveal himself. It's been destined for us to begin to understand who God is and what truth actually is. None of the rulers of this age understood it. They didn't understand God's wisdom. For if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. He's saying this, the most successful empire, political empire the world has ever seen, the Roman Empire, and maybe the most zealous religion the world has ever seen, Judaism, they missed it. They missed it. They couldn't understand what Paul refers to as the foolishness of God. They crucified God. They couldn't even comprehend that the crucified Jesus, the crucified Messiah, was actually the King of the universe. It just did not compute for them whatsoever. However, as it is written, now Paul's going to go back to the book of Isaiah, chapter 64, 65, and it looks like a little bit from chapter 40 as well. What no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no human mind has conceived. How many people like are into the world of thoughts? Like, I've been told before, I have a cartoon brain. Like, I just think like, blah, 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 right? Paul says, you can't even conceive God's truth. The things God has prepared, God's actually doing this, prepared for those who love him. These are the things that God has, and here's the important word, revealed. God has revealed to us how? By his Spirit. This is where he begins to blow up the maze. The truth is not found through intellectual pursuit. He says, truth is revealed. It is a gift. How? Not through my intellect, not through the right teachers, but by his Spirit. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God, the most profound mysteries, the most complex theological concepts. The Spirit of God searches them, even the deep things of God. For who knows a person's thoughts except their own spirit within them? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. So Paul's using an illustration. Okay, some of you I know really well. I'm gonna ask you this question. What am I thinking right now? I am thinking a little bit about lunch, but that's not what I was thinking about. Right? Nobody. Paul's saying, who can know what someone else is thinking except for that person themselves? Their own spirit can tell you what they're thinking. Now, my wife does not believe me. Even after nearly 30 years of marriage, she'll say, what are you thinking about? I said, nothing. And she'll go, no, you were thinking about something. I'm like, no, seriously, I have the capacity to sit in a chair and have a completely blank mind. There is nothing happening upstairs. Nothing. And I don't think that ever happens for her. But I'll just be like, I love it. I just love when I just tune out. She doesn't know what I'm thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. And this is what Paul's saying. The only person who actually knows God, who knows truth, is God's Spirit. He's searching the deepest things of God. So if that's true, then what we have received is not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit, notice this is capitalized, who is from God, so that we may understand, comprehend what God has freely given us. Going back to this idea of revelation, it's a gift. It's not intellectual pursuit. It's being taught by the Spirit. This is what we speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit, explaining spiritual realities with Spirit-taught words. The person without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God, but considers them actually foolishness and cannot understand them because they are discerned, comprehended only through the Spirit. Let me pause there for a moment. So every spring when we do high school graduations, we try to do like a baccalaureate for high schoolers that are graduating and spend time just talking to them, encouraging them, praying over them, sending them. And every year this has happened. Kid comes to me super excited right before they leave for school. Says, I'm going to such and such university. And I'm like, what are you going to take? And they're super excited because they're like, I'm going to take a class called The History of Christianity or Comparative Religion or The Bible as Literature. And they're just super excited. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. And I look at them and I say, take a class, but please, at Christmas time, come and talk to me. Okay. They're super excited. Come back at Christmas time. Nate, I don't understand. I just had the most brilliant professor in the world. This guy, this lady is an intellect. They've written papers about the book. They know the Bible in its original Hebrew, Greek, and Aramaic languages. But they said, I don't think they believe it. They didn't talk about the things we talk about in church. They just saw it as a form of literature. This is what Paul's talking about. This is what Paul's talking about. He's saying this, you could have this book and you could study it using your own intellect, trying to work your way through the maze, and you won't understand how profound it is. Because real truth is taught by the Spirit. So if that professor of yours does not have a resurrected, renewed spirit from God, they can't even learn the things of God. The most brilliant minds in the world can't get there. Now, just a little sidelight to this. I find it interesting that oftentimes what we do, if somebody is spiritually unresolved, so that might be you, maybe you're watching, you're here in the room, you're like, I'm not sure what I believe. A lot of times we tell you to read the Bible, which I'm not sure that's always the best idea, because half the time you start like in the book of Leviticus or something. And you're like, there's just a lot of blood and guts. I didn't understand that at all. I understand. But you came back with this one verse that says, do not eat bats. And you're like, I'm down with that one. I got that one. I will not eat a bat, right? So here's the challenge. Some of you, like, right now, you're saying, I want to find God. I want to find truth. And you told me to read the Bible, but I don't get it. Here's what Paul's saying. You can't get it yet. You won't be able to get it because you actually need the Spirit of God to be revealing things. You're just trying to make your way through a maze. And so truth, understanding, is actually revelation, and it's this gift God gives us through His Spirit. You just can't find it by yourself. Let's move on. The person with the Spirit makes judgments about all things, ethics, how I'm gonna operate in business, how I'm gonna treat the people around me. But such a person is not subject to merely human judgments, for who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? If you remember nothing else about our half hour, just memorize this verse right now. Put it in your memory. Paul concludes the whole thing. How to understand truth, how to know God, with this. But we have the mind of Christ. What? How many people in the room would be open to a successful brain transplant? An upgrade? I'd take an upgrade any day. We'll get into this in a second. Paul says this, you know what? You have a new mind. Not one that has to find its way through the maze to ascend to some truth and enlightenment. You have this gift from God. the spirit within you, and you now have a new mind, and it is the mind of Jesus, the mind of the Spirit. Okay, I wanna make three comments as I've just been working through this scripture. Here's three things I hope for, hopefully they're helpful to you. Number one would be this. After reading this text, I want to give more room, more thought, and more space for the work of the Spirit in my life. Paul's gonna talk a lot about the Spirit. When we get to the teen chapters in 1 Corinthians, it's gonna have to do with what he calls the charismata, the supernaturals. He's gonna talk about like stuff we're all gonna be like, whoa, speaking in tongues and prophecy and all this. It's all beautiful. But Paul says this. He says, if you wanna know truth and you wanna know God, what you need is a more vibrant, open relationship with the Spirit of God. You don't need more knowledge. See, can we go back to the maze illustration for a second? Sometimes it just drives me crazy what Christian authors do. Have you seen any of these books out there? They're like, there is a profound, deep mysteries of God. And some so-and-so said, you know what, I read the Bible and I skipped every other chapter and I read the fourth word in the next chapter, the third letter, and I found a secret code written in the Bible. And this is no joke. And it tells me that Prince Charles is the Antichrist. And I'm thinking to myself, Prince Charles could not lead himself out of a cardboard box, let alone deceive the entire world, right? But this guy found a secret code within the Bible. What is that? What is that? That's not trusting the Spirit. That's me taking it upon myself to figure out this secret code. And look, I navigated through to find profound truth. You know what every Monday is like for me? Every Monday, I'm not complaining. It's the honor of my life. But I will be in here tomorrow, and I've had this conversation with God for 26 years. Dear God, the weekend is coming. I don't have anything to say. Would you please give me something to say for these people? Like, please. So if I'm not careful, what do? I just start trying to work my way through the maze. I've got 7 days till go day. I'm going to find out some deep spiritual truth. You know what I need? I need more of the Spirit. Because this is what Paul says. You don't have to work your way through the maze. Here's truth. Here's everything you would ever need to know about God. And this is how it actually works. When you have the Spirit of God in you, it's called revelation. It transcends the maze. God comes and teaches us. And we can be understanding. It's called revelation, not achievement. So I want to be more open to the Spirit of God. And this is what I love fundamentally about the teachings of Jesus, is this is not just for the pastor who gets to sit up front, but this is for everybody who's online, everybody who's in the room who says, yes, I have a new resurrected spirit. Well, guess what? You can be taught by the Spirit of God the most profound truths imaginable. In fact, you will never, if you're a follower of Jesus, read this Bible alone. You will have the tutor. This is what Jesus says in John chapter 14, 15, 16. He says this. He says, it's better that I actually leave you. And his disciples are like, no, we don't want you to go. But Jesus says, hey, I'm the man God. I'm confined by time and space. He goes, it's better that I go, because when I go, I'll be able to send you the Spirit. Now here's the advantage. When the Spirit comes, he'll be able to teach you all things and lead you into all truth. So when you sit down with this book, it's not about what can you achieve, what can you find out, where's the secret? It's about saying this, God, I need to be tutored right now. Because I don't understand. I'm just humble, I'm open. What do you want to say? Now, this gets a little bit scary, doesn't it? Because have you ever found anybody who says, you know, the Spirit of God came to me and told me that I should quit wearing clothes in public. And you're like, no, 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 that wasn't the spirit. I've had people look at me and said, hey, God told me that I was supposed to divorce him. I was supposed to divorce her. Like, it's over. Our marriage is no longer fruitful. I'm like, that wasn't God. God didn't tell you to do something like that. So it's a little scary. Now, why doesn't Paul say? I actually think we're tempted to say this. That the Bible will lead you into all truth. There's a couple reasons. One, he's writing the Bible, okay? Two, it's gonna be centuries before there's a reformation, before an insecure church who wants to control the Bible, afraid that if commoners get it, they'll understand who they actually are and how this whole thing's supposed to work, and they won't submit and they won't give and all that. And it's gonna be centuries before a printing press comes about. So Paul doesn't say the Bible leads you into all truth. In fact, I would say this. I would say it is easy for us, if you're a follower of Jesus, to kind of morph the Trinity. Okay, so the whole idea that God is triune, he's one, not three different people, one unified, but there's these representations that he is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Okay, three in one. If that is hard to understand, that's okay. I don't understand it either. It's beyond us. You are also triune. There's a body, there's a soul, there's a spirit of you. So here's how we morph the Trinity. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Bible. If I'm not careful, I make this book the third member of the Trinity. And I try to get my way through by understanding this. This book is such a tremendous gift. I've given my life to trying to understand and teach this book. I am not underemphasizing the Bible. But if I don't have the Spirit of God to teach me, I'm never gonna get it. That's why I need the Spirit of God. That's why you need the Spirit of God. And this book, it's now a gift for those of us who are living later in these 2,000 years of Christianity. Now I've got a guardrail. God's never gonna tell me something that's in opposition to this book. It's just an added way for me to comprehend who God is. I want for you, I want for each of us to give more space and more room, less emphasis on my intellect and more emphasis to saying, I just wanna be taught. I just want you to guide me into all truth. I don't want to make it all about me. Here's the second thing. I have to understand that the fall of humanity impacted my intellect. Okay, the fall of humanity impacted my intellect. So this was really challenging for the Greeks, because remember, they divide the world up into the spiritual, which is untainted and immortal, and the physical world, which is mortal and broken and tainted and can't even actually ever be fixed. Okay? So if the whole spiritual realm, the realm of thought, is perfect, what do they think? Well, they think, well, I can get there through my mind. I work my way through the maze. And Paul says this, here's the problem. Your noggin is broken. Anybody ever feel like their mind's broken? I do, like every week. So Genesis chapter 3, which we go back to all the time because it helps us to understand the world. It's the third chapter in the Bible. God says this, if you choose to be your own gods, if you choose to turn your back on me, you will die. Now, physically they didn't die immediately, but parts of them were shattered and broken. So we know that relationally it's broken. We know that their relationship with God is now fractured. We know that their relationship with creation is now fractured. But one of the things that we often overlook is that their intellect was now fractured. They were designed to hear God, to know God, to walk with God, to comprehend God, to understand truth. But because of human rebellion, death enters in, and my brain quit working the way God designed it to work. But the Corinthians, they couldn't think that way. They thought, no, 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 our brain is all good. This is where our potential is. And Paul's saying, no, no, your brain's broken. I have a friend who's a neurologist. He's actually in our small group we're meeting tonight. And I've read these studies. I don't know if you've ever read them. They say that human beings typically only use 20% of their brains. Like at any given time, only 20, like the best people, 20% of your brain is working. It means 80% of your brain is doing what? I get that I might be like higher percentage because I can do that a lot. So he's saying like, you don't even, so I asked him this. He goes, yeah, it's really weird. Like a lot of our brain isn't even utilized or accessed whatsoever. That explains a lot for me. Because my brain is broken. I'm operating on 2 out of 8 cylinders. I'm worse than a Yugo. Like I'm a go-kart basically. I'm barely puttering along. And when I can understand that this thing's broken, what's my choice? Humility. God, teach me. Because my intellect is fractured and I need revelation. It's not anti-intellectual. It's just I want to receive the gift that you could heal my intellect, that you could bypass my brain and teach me. Remember, it's not human words, but it's spiritual truths to our spirits. And here's the third and final thing. Remember, I have a new mind. Okay, a new mind. I had a really interesting week. It was one of the most challenging, like, leadership weeks of my life. I got involved in a situation. There's 1,700 churches and a leadership team, and there has been a split. There's anger. There's hurt. It is chaotic. It is messy. This is a church, like a denominational level. Okay, it is. I bet I've spent somewhere between 35 and 45 hours on Zoom calls in the past 7 days, just trying to find a way through. And there's so much hurt, and like, can we move forward? And like, it's not pretty. On Wednesday, I'm sitting in front of my computer looking at Zoom, and I just see the rift is so big, like the pain here, and I cannot get a clear thought. I just feel like overwhelmed. I don't know how to help this situation at all, and I just wanted to give up. I thought, you know what? Probably too much water under the bridge. Thank God. Thank God. Literally, I've been studying 1 Corinthians chapter 2 this week, because I realized I've got a confused, muddled brain right now. And it just came to me. The Holy Spirit just spoke to me. You have the mind of Christ. It just changed everything. Hey, wait a minute. This isn't up to my intellect. This isn't up to me trying to find a pathway of healing. Wait a minute. I got a mind that's the mind of Christ, which understands all things, the true things. And I'm looking at all these people on my Zoom screen, and I'm thinking, you're ticked, but you know what? You're a follower of Jesus. You got a mind of Christ. We don't have a mind that's filled with unforgiveness or anger or wrath or distrust. Let's take our new mind and actually exercise it. The new mind, the mind of Christ. Because some of us in the room, if I ask you in private, say, hey, describe to me your mind. You say, well, I have a really insecure mind. Some will say, I got a dirty mind. Oof, I've been working on that forever. I got a mind that's filled with pain. And my mind is distrustful. My mind is insecure. My mind is all this. Anybody, like, I always call it cerebral congestion, or sometimes cerebral constipation. Like, my mind just does not work the way I would like it to work. Like, think. Nothing's coming out, right? Here's what Paul says. Knowing truth and knowing God isn't dependent upon your IQ. Maybe you can even do the New York Times Sunday edition crossword puzzle. It doesn't help you get any closer to God. You have a new mind. You have the mind of Christ. You have the very Spirit of God who knows the most profound truths, teaching you. Not in human words. It's not human understanding, but it's revelation. So it's not about you trying more. It's about humility and reception. God, teach us. We hope that this helps you take your next step on your spiritual journey. If you'd like to get involved with the work and ministry of Faith Chapel, visit faithchapel.cc and click on Next Steps. If you'd like to speak to a pastor or connect with us in any way, email connect@faithchapel.cc. We look forward to connecting with you soon.